You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You're listening to Part-Time Genius, a production of Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
Today we're doing a show on cheese crimes. I've been excited for this one, so I've got a question for you to kick things off. So what's the first thing that comes to mind when I say cheese crime? Because there's so many things that could come to mind. What comes to mind for you?
I didn't know there was going to be a pop quiz.
Yeah,
I guess off the top. Someone committing a crime with cheese, like maybe bludgeoning someone with like a huge wheel of Parmesan and then eating that Parmesan so there's okay. No murder weapon.
Oh, that would be like the perfect crime.
Yeah, or maybe just using Cheese Whiz in a sandwich, which is kind of a cheese crime, I feel like.
Ouch. I like the way you just quickly planned a murder around a wheel of cheese, and then you dissed a giant part of Philadelphia culture. This is all in the first minute of the show. But the thing is, cheese is reportedly the most shoplifted food in the world. Plus, it's the target of all sorts of craziness, from stealing and grifting to heist and even smuggling.
So this whole episode is kind of just a bad setup for a nacho cheese joke?
That's the whole reason. That's why I'm excited for this. All right, let's dive in. Welcome back to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will, and as always, I'm here with my good friend Mango. And somewhere behind that big booth is our pal Dylan, who has a giant can of Easy Cheese and a plate full of crackers that actually, Mango, I think he's preparing for us. The guy's just so generous.
I love that he made us a snack.
That's really sweet.
I guess he didn't want us to be hangry.
No.
But speaking of cheese crimes, I know this is a little off topic, but can you retell that story about that time you stopped at a gas station and was starving?
Oh. I didn't think we were going to go there. But so I was in a hurry to a meeting one day. And for whatever reason, it had been an ongoing joke about grabbing a hot dog from a gas station with a group of friends. I truly was in a rush, was filling up with gas. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to get a gas station hot dog because I was hangry.
Yeah.
And so I grabbed one. I go out to the car, finished, you know, filling up the tank. I take a bite of the, this is going to sound like terrible. I took a bite of the hot dog and suddenly I feel something like hot, like squirt the back of my throat, which I hate to even say those words. And I looked and the hot dog had been cheese injected. And I had heard of these before and I know that they exist. I have no interest in them, but I also just, I want a heads up when my hot dog is going to have cheese in it. and I didn't know. And so needless to say, I did not finish the hot dog. It is the last time I've had a gas station hot dog. So yeah, that's the story.
It's a good warning to all our listeners to check out the label on the hot dog before you
always
bite into
find
it.
Out whether it's cheese injected. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get started. I know the reason we chose this episode is that we'd both heard that shoplifting fact about cheese. Yep. Like that's the most shoplifted food. And I'd also heard about this Parmesan mafia. So I was curious what the real story was there. But mm-hmm. why don't we start with just a quick list of how expensive cheese can be? So here's a quick top three of expensive cheeses I found on a site called Chef's Pencil. So number one is Poole, which is a donkey cheese. Talked about this before. But just to get a sense of how expensive it is for comparison, grocery store cheddars can go for about $6 a pound. Mozzarella might go for like $8 a pound, but mm-hmm. Poole goes for $600 a pound.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And the reason is it's mostly made of donkey milk, right? Mm. It's 60% donkey milk, 40% goat milk. So donkeys are doing the heavy lifting there. And apparently, unlike goats, donkeys are stingy milk givers. Like you have to milk them 3 times a day. They only give milk 6 months of the year. So production is really tricky. Mm. Plus, there's only one farm that makes Poole, and it's in the donkey reserve in Serbia.
Right, right. You know, for whatever reason, I have not seen this $600 a pound cheese in the Piggly Wiggly in Alabama. But my question is it any good?
Yeah, I mean, I love that you're asking me, like, I have, like, caviar and Poole breakfast tacos every morning. But so if you do a quick internet search, it's supposedly nutty and earthy, and it tastes like Manchego. It doesn't sound like that special, but I actually read this review from this cheese blogger, Miss Cheesemonger, mm-hmm. who's a cheese connoisseur from San Francisco, and it immediately made me want to try some. So this is what she says. Quote, "Once I took a bite, I understood what made this cheese special. There were so many layers of flavor, from demi-sel butter at the foundation, to the middle flavors of sweet grasses, to the extremely heady floral notes that lingered in a ridiculously long finish. This was no ordinary fresh cheese. It was aromatic to the extreme. I might as well have been inhaling the scent of milk on a Serbian hillside. Texture-wise, it is not so unusual. Oh, but that lingering, longing aftertaste. It was like nothing I had ever tasted."
I actually just ordered some on Amazon while you were talking about it. It sounded so appealing.
So she points out there are only about 100 jennies or female donkeys that can produce the milk for this special cheese. And the fresh cheese is often best eaten the day it's made, which I'm sure also drives up that price.
And actually, that's the cheese that Djokovic was supposedly trying to corner the market on, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I'd heard so much about that. It was basically this drummed up story that the producers at the farm and a poorly sourced Daily Mail article made up. But Djokovic apparently has no interest in a monopoly on donkey cheese.
Okay, mainly tennis. Yeah. Okay, got it. So, all right. So that's number one. What's number two on your list?
Moose cheese. Okay. Which feels like it could use better branding than just moose cheese, but it goes for $500 a pound. And again,
it's a steal compared to some donkey cheese.
Pretty laborious because you're trying to milk a 1,200 pound moose here. it's made from a place called the Elk House in Sweden. And according to Chef's Pencil, all the moose cheese comes from 3 moose named Gulan, Juna, and Helga.
Okay.
Helga's cheese is my favorite, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Wow, that's fascinating. I do want to try both of those. And I feel like all these cheeses are expensive because they're not goat or cow cheeses. So I'm predicting number three is going to be elephant cheese. Am I right?
Well, no elephant cheese on my list. But I do feel like the next few cheeses that are listed across the internet as the most expensive cheeses are kind of frauds. Like there's Stilton Gold, which is flecked with this edible gold leaf, which I don't feel like it should count. It's almost like saying, like, I made you the world's most expensive burger and I put truffles under a Big Mac or something, right? Like it's not really expensive on its own. But I'm going to say number three is Wyck Farm Cheddar. Mm. It's supposedly this incredibly tasty cheddar. It sells for $200 a pound. And the family that makes it has kept the recipe a secret since 1861.
Okay. All right. So at $200 a pound, if you're stealing one of these giant wheels of cheddar, you could make a lot of money off of that. But Doesn't it feel like stealing one of these super expensive cheeses is almost like stealing a Picasso off the wall of a museum? Like, it's worth a lot more, but also someone is going to be looking for you.
Yeah, and there's some cheese detectives out there who specialize in cheese thefts, which is pretty amazing.
I love that as a job. All right, I do want to hear about that, but before we do, let's talk about cheese's origins. So just a quick primer on this. While we don't know the first instance of humans making cheese, we do know that cheese making is related to the domestication of milk-producing animals. No surprise there. Now, that goes back about 8 to 10,000 years ago. You can also find cheese making in Greek mythology, which is pretty interesting to see. And there's evidence of cheese and cheese making that's been found on Egyptian tomb murals. These date back probably 4,000 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. But the truth is, cheese was probably discovered accidentally.
So I actually remember that bit because we did a show about Kraft singles and we talked about how cheese, penicillin, and the Slinky were like the greatest accidental discoveries in mankind.
Easy top three. All equally important. But there are a few different theories of how we got cheese. It could have been the practice of storing milk in containers made from stomachs of animals. We've talked about that a little bit, which naturally contain this enzyme called rennet. And that would cause the milk to coagulate. It separates into curds and whey. Now, another possibility is the practice of salting curdled milk for preservation, or the addition of fruit juices to milk, which would result in the curdling of the milk.
It's kind of like how my kids accidentally make cheese when they leave a carton of milk in the back of the fridge too long. But I can't imagine eating that.
No, it's not the type of thing Dylan, I think, would serve on a Ritz cracker. I don't see it on the plate back there. But if you dump some salt on that gloop, you basically have early cheese. The Roman Empire produced and traded hundreds of varieties of cheese. So it was certainly an industry back then. And trade with Europe could explain how the cheese got to Asia. But there could have been parallel thinking at work here, too. The Tibetans, the Mongolians, they've also got this long history of producing cheeses. And of course, cheese has been produced in America since the early 17th century when the English Puritans brought their knowledge of dairy farming and cheese making from the Old World over to the colonies.
Right. And now Americans are so obsessed with cheese that we feel comfortable wearing like giant cheese hats on our heads to sports games.
I love those cheese hats. I've always thought about getting one. I never have. But interestingly, Wisconsin didn't start out in the cheese business.
Really?
The state was actually a leading wheat supplier before the Civil War. But as crop yields started to fail, Wisconsin farmers knew they needed to pivot to something, and they pivoted to dairy. Huh. Now, at the same time, settlers from New England and Ohio and New York and other places in that region, they started moving west, as did the Europeans. So all of these folks start bringing this interest in cheese and knowledge of cheese production to the area. So the result is today that Wisconsin produces more than a quarter of all domestic cheese in the U.S.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah, cheese is, of course, a huge business, part of why we're talking about it here. But the U.S. cheese retail market is growing, and it's slated to reach $27.8 billion by 2028.
Wow.
The retail cheese sales in the U.K. are expected to reach 5.2 billion euros by 2028.
So obviously huge amounts of money, and it makes sense why cheese crime is a thing.
Yeah. And as far as commodities that are worth stealing, cheese is ripe. But yeah, you like what I did there? But think about it. Compared to the other dairy products, it's durable and it's easy to transport. It doesn't melt like ice cream or spill or leak or spoil as fast as milk. And it's ubiquitous. Like, it's in cuisines around the world. People everywhere love cheese, which makes it easier to sell. Plus, unlike guns or drugs, cheese is mostly legal.
Which is a good segue into some cheese jackings. This was a big thing in Italy back in 2006. Apparently, gangs would lie in wait at service stations on the Milan-Bologna motorway. Mm-hmm. And as soon as a truck driver would stop for coffee, they'd ambush them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kind of makes driving a cheese truck seem pretty dangerous, actually.
Yeah. And in one instance, a driver was threatened by four armed men and then tied up while his van carrying 300 wheels of cheese was driven away. The cheese wheels were then taken to this industrial estate. They were cut up and sold in stores. And this happened for quite a while with different bands of criminals. In 2015, a group of criminals were arrested in Modena for stealing roughly $900,000 worth of Parmesan cheese.
Wow.
Yeah, and according to the Italian news site Il Sole 24, the criminals were so savvy that they stole over 2,039 wheels of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese over the course of roughly 2 years.
It feels so weird that there's basically this like Ocean's 11 of cheese. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something fascinating about it. But in general, it must be so hard to catch a cheese thief because it's not like you can track these like using GPS or anything like that.
Yeah. So producers and the Italian Farmers Union, which is called Coldiretti, are experimenting with microchips and they're hidden in the crusts of the cheese, which means they are actually more identifiable. Hmm. They also have markings burnt on the crust so that you can help police track the stolen cheese. But it's still a huge problem. A recent survey by Coldiretti found that Parmesan is the most shoplifted item in Italy.
Oh, wow. It's a little different than here where it's mostly like, I would guess, batteries and deodorant or something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, we might need that deodorant because we're also hard at work stealing cheese.
Yes.
It's not just Italy. In 2016, 70,000 pounds of cheese were stolen from a cheese store in Germantown, Wisconsin, and later recovered in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Apparently, the thieves' undoing was trying to sell the cheese on the cheap. Like they tried to hawk their contraband cheese for just $1 a pound. And as you well know, no self-respecting Wisconsin retailer would expect to pay so little.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And nor would they buy the cheese without knowing its provenance. But, you know, these thefts, they make the Wisconsin cheese community really, really upset. There's this guy, Tyson Wormheister, the co-owner of Mars Cheese Castle. And he said, a cheese like that, not available for use, it saddens me.
I feel like I need to know what Mars Cheese Castle is.
It's a castle-shaped restaurant specializing in cheese food.
Okay, that sounds about right. Well, I know we want to talk more about cheese crimes and, of course, those cheese detectives that you teased earlier, but let's take a quick break first.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're talking cheese crimes. So there are obviously lots of these cheese theft stories. There's this one from 2013 where a guy showed up to a manufacturer in Wisconsin, forged a bunch of paperwork, then drove away with $200,000 worth of Munster. There's a story from France in 2015 where thieves broke into a dairy and stole 100 wheels of specialty Conte cheese. They boosted four tons of cheese. And there's another of these heist stories from a cellar in France where 700 blocks of delicious Saint Nectar cheese were stolen. It's amazing. I mean, just how much cheese these bandits are taking off with. It's not a little bit of cheese.
Yeah, it's insane, which brings us to cheese detectives. There's this great piece on the Today Show site about this officer. His name's Inspector Giorgio Capovani.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right for a cheese detective.
And this is from 2008. So it's a little dated, but the agency actually still exists. Mm-hmm. But this is what the article says about him. Quote, In the Wild West of gastronomical ripoffs, men like Capovani are a kind of sheriff. They are sworn judicial officers who can demand admission to premises, examine documentation, and confiscate products at wholesalers, warehouses, or supermarket aisles. And according to the article, they can even tote weapons if they want. It talks about how Capovani and his men race around Europe, protecting Italy's very special products, like mozzarella from Bufala is one, hams from Parma or whatever. They'll go into what the article describes as cathedrals of ham, these shops where the meat is just air drying in warehouses, and they'll poke the ham with this special needle made from the shin bone of a horse. And that apparently releases these extraordinary aromas. Then the inspector, who I guess is also a gourmand, will sniff the needle to make sure it has that special Parma prosciutto scent. Apparently, they seize something like 1,000 Parma ham knockoffs in one of these raids.
And then how do they catch these folks?
Apparently, one of these ham counterfeiters had like 20 aliases, and the Spanish police have been chasing them around for decades. But Capovani and his team have this whole network of salespeople who double as informants. And so they tip off the investigators whenever they sense something fishy.
There are people out there doing much more interesting stuff than we are, legal and illegal. But are they now doing this for cheese as well?
Yeah. And more than stopping the heist, this team is basically set up to chase ripoffs, right? Like the producers know that if people start thinking Parma ham is a less quality ham and it's less sweet, then they'll start thinking like, what's the difference between that and some of the sort of like grocery knockoffs or whatever, right? And it's the same for cheese. So there's this scene of Capovani running his hand across a rind and pointing out why this branding on a food is clearly counterfeit. Apparently, there's a whole system of branding machines that the authenticated manufacturers use that make slightly imperfect marks to thwart counterfeiters. And the machines are really closely monitored. They're switched out every 3 months, which, you know, feels insane. But Capovani takes pride in sniffing out the fakes. And in fact, he claims to have a museum of hundreds of fraudulent Parmesan.
Yeah, I know there's this whole world of fakes out there. This is one of the things that kept coming up as we were preparing for this episode. And you know the old saying, I think, goes something like, if your cheese is fishy, it might be sawdust.
I don't think I know that saying.
Not familiar with that one? I think Mamaw had it cross-stitched on a pillow at some point. But back in 2016, Time revealed a jaw-dropping report on manufacturers like Castle Cheese, not to be confused with the Mars Cheese Castle that you talked about before, which produced, quote, Parmesan that contains significant amounts of wood pulp as a filler.
It's like a cheese made for termites.
Yes, it's gross. And some experts believe about a fifth of the Parmesan cheese bought at grocery stores is actually mislabeled. And representatives for the Emmentaler cheesemakers, which we usually refer to as Swiss cheese, say that around 10% of the Swiss cheese on the market is fake. It's true for all kinds of cheese, Manchego, Camembert, but Parmesan is hit particularly hard. Sales of Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese are about $2.44 billion, according to Food and Wine, but fake Parmesan takes an almost equal wedge of the wheel with about $2.08 billion every single year.
I didn't realize the size of the market.
Yeah. Well, weirdly, cheese has been stuffed with more sinister substances than just sawdust. In 2023, customs officials encountered a pickup truck transporting four large wheels of cheese from Mexico into Texas, and they had a hunch that something was off here.
Which doesn't sound strange at all. I always load up my truck with giant cheese wheels.
Yeah. Well, actually, an x-ray scan of these cheese revealed, quote, anomalies there, which upon further inspection turned out to be 17.8 pounds of cocaine. So I... That feels like that's an anomaly. You know,
this feels pretty tame in retrospect.
Yeah. No, this is, I don't think I've eaten cheese with a bunch of cocaine in it, but it's a good idea hiding stuff in cheese. Like if you wanted to propose and you put a diamond ring and, you know, deep in a wheel of cheese there, your potential fiance would never go digging around in there. It's a great place to hide stuff.
Speaking of soft cheeses, do you know that Switzerland used to have a cartel that was responsible for the popularity of fondue?
Wait, did you say a cartel?
I mean, it was more of a union.
All right, so why did you say cartel, though? I'm curious.
I'm a Brooklyn dad. I need some excitement.
Yeah.
And I guess more than a few articles online refer to it as a cartel because of the way they fixed prices and manipulated the market. Anyway, it was called the Association of Swiss Cheese Export Firms, better known as the Schweizer Käse Union.
Okay.
Or Swiss Cheese Union. This was an organized monopoly designed to use cheese export revenue to offset milk production costs because of World War I. And the SCU fixed prices and production limits. And most importantly, they restricted what types of cheese could be made in the country. So actually, Switzerland used to make over 1,000 different varietals, and they reduced it to just 7 or 8. Hmm. And they favored Swiss cheese, you know, or what we know as Swiss cheese. It was super effective. In 1929, a Wisconsin newspaper reported that consumption of imported Swiss cheese had increased in the U.S. because of a $300,000 ad campaign run by the Swiss Cheese Union, which had also copyrighted the cheese in the U.S., calling it Switzerland cheese.
Hmm. And so that's why when we say Swiss cheese, we mean Emmentaler.
Yeah. And that was just the beginning. In the 50s and 60s, the SCU ramped up their promotions and they sent a young woman named Elisabeth Koenigsdorfer to the U.S. as the ambassadress of Switzerland cheese.
That's a great title.
She was beautiful, multilingual, an expert skier, just kind of like the perfect cliche of like a Swiss woman. And she would travel the U.S. giving these cooking lessons for dishes like quiche Lorraine and fondue and also teaching Americans things like you're not supposed to freeze your cheese, which was apparently a thing we used to do regularly. Hmm. Anyway, the SCU went really hard on fondue in the 70s, mainly because it's easy to make and it requires a lot of cheese. So they really sort of like flooded the interest in making fondue. And they ran these global ad campaigns featuring these beautiful Swiss people in ski sweaters, making it seem kind of healthy.
Healthy. It does sound like they're marketing it almost like a sports drink in a way, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like everyone should sub out your Gatorade for a thermos of Swiss cheese.
That's really, really appetizing, Mango.
But the SCU was everywhere. From 1992 to 1998, they were the main sponsor of the Swiss national ski team. So the teams actually wore these yellow suits with cheese hole motifs. I mean,
Look at that.
I just want to show you this picture. Yeah,
that is amazing. They look like the cheese.
I know. And they actually had holes in their suit, which caused drag, which is kind of annoying to a skier, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're representing your country in this huge athletic excellence performance, and you've trained your whole life to wear the uniform and the cheese suit. It feels a little bit demeaning to me.
Yeah, I think so too. Anyway, by the 1990s, the Swiss sentiment towards the SCU had changed. It was seen less as a protector of this like national industry and more as a system of power abuse. Corruption scandals didn't help either. In 1996, a former SCU executive was arrested for skimming at least 350,000 Swiss francs in a cheese export price scam. And in 1999, the SCU was dissolved. The Swiss Museum writes, quote, during the 80s and 90s, the cheese union came to be regarded principally as a cautionary tale of abuse of power and fondue.
Abuse of fondue. That's great. All right. But I feel like we should get back to your boring Brooklyn dad thing.
I don't think I said boring.
Well, you know, when you were talking about cartels, and there have been these links between the cheese industry and the mafia. There's this story about Al Capone, who owned this string of dairy farms near Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, forcing New York pizzerias to use this very like rubbery mob cheese. Mm. And as the story goes, the only places permitted to use good mozzarella were the old-fashioned pizza parlors. You know, places like Lombardi's, Patsy's, mm-hmm. John's, which could continue doing so only if they promised to never serve slices. So according to the author Jonathan Quitney in his book Vicious Circles, The Mafia in the Marketplace, this is why John's Pizzeria on Bleecker Street still has the warning, no slices, on its awning today. Apparently, neighborhood pizzerias that serve slices and refuse to use Capone's cheese would be firebombed. Wow. But according to historian Scott Wiener, that we both know from Scott's Pizza Tours, mm-hmm. the story is probably not true. It doesn't really make any sense, he says. The reason that most of these places don't sell slices is that they use these coal-fired ovens, which would just burn any slice that you were trying to reheat.
I love Scott so much.
Yeah,
I remember
awesome.
The first time I met him and I heard he was pizza obsessed. His opening line was, "So what do you like about pizza?" Like,
yeah.
And he was like, "Do you like the sauce? Do you like the crust, the cheese?" And then he just like went on to, you know, give me this fascinating history of pizza. But I just assumed those no slices places were trying to sell you more pizza.
Yeah, I mean, they are, but the no slices might be a little bit of mafia lore, but the mob shaking down people over mozzarella is on the record. So Joseph Bonanno, a mafia godfather, partially owned Grande, this cheese company based in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. That's where Capone's handful of dairy farms were too. So this March 1980 report from the Pennsylvania Crime Commission states that Bonanno, quote, initiated a conspiracy to control the specialty cheese business in the United States in the early 1940s, and that he and his associates controlled the activities of the largest and most prosperous specialty cheese companies.
I love that they came out with that report in 1980.
Yeah, like, about, you know, they wanted to go ahead and take care of it. Yeah.
So we've got the mob spotting like this potential to make a lot of money, and they're putting a toehold in that industry, which is, you know, pretty standard for the mob. But I also kind of love the idea of Al Capone having his own dairy farm and just like...
It's sweet, right?
I know, just like nuzzling every cow's nose before he puts them in the barn at night.
Yeah, it's a weird image. But since we're on the mob, the Italian mafia, or more specifically, the Camorra, is also pretty mixed up with Buffalo mozzarella, which is made in Campania. Now, in the early aughts, the Camorra controlled Italy's biggest Buffalo mozzarella maker, the Magara Group. Now, obviously, mozzarella is hugely popular as a cheese, which meant buffalo milk was basically liquid gold for the most part. And that's what attracted the interest of the Camorra. So the Camorra started charging this protection money.
Sure.
And in early 2001, during one weekend, two well-known cheese houses just went up in flames, La Perla and Barlotti, which helped them make their case to the manufacturers. Of course, taking care of barns full of buffalo comes with its own problems. Like, apparently buffalo are very susceptible to infectious bacterial outbreaks like brucelliosis, and controlling these farms suspected of brucelliosis isn't easy, and it requires, you know, herd depopulation from time to time. And obviously that's not great for mozzarella production, so often state veterinarians would show up to inspect the farm. And instead of getting to do their work, they'd be met by the members of the Camorra at gunpoint. Like, sometimes the mobsters would thin the herd by hiding a bunch of buffalo.
So state officials are there. They're inspecting the farm. Meanwhile, it's like one guy's job to hide a bunch of sick buffalo.
I guess. I mean, buffalo are huge, though. It's like trying to hide a pack of Land Rovers, you know, just trying to imagine this. But if that didn't work, they would just force sanitary officials to sign the certificate of good health, despite the fact that the herd is clearly infected.
Yeah, it seems like a easier plan B.
Yeah. So the Camorra's involvement in buffalo mozzarella has actually threatened the ecosystem of the entire region.
Huh.
They got involved with waste management back in the 1980s, and according to a mafia treasurer who testified about this in 1997, the Camorra had been illegally dumping and burning millions of tons of toxic waste in Campania, leading to reports of cancer clusters and other health issues.
That's awful. So obviously cheese can be involved in crime, but there's no such thing as illegal cheese, right?
Well, I mean, Danish feta is actually illegal, according to the EU. Feta was awarded the appellation of being a designated Greek product, but Denmark was producing it and exporting it to non-EU territories. And so in 2019, the European Commission took Denmark to the European Court of Justice. And of course, there are really gross cheeses like, you know, Casu Marzu. So that's illegal too.
Yeah, the Sardinian cheese with maggots that jump out at you, which is pretty disgusting.
I'd say that counts as disgusting. And there's a hairy cheese fermented in the stomach of a baby goat and left out in the open air. It's this delicacy, also from Sardinia, called Sucalu. And people are apparently selling it from their cars, I guess. That's what I read. It's according to this piece in The Outline, but it's interesting. The Outline writes that these illegal cheeses aren't just a matter of unusual taste. They're also low-stakes political statements of people telling the EU or whoever they can that they can't dictate values on them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't want any of that maggot cheese in my mouth, but I also support Sardinia's right to protect their culture, I guess.
It's good for you to take a stand, Mango. I know usually you don't make political statements, but that's a pretty big one. And here's some mystery cheese you can definitely support. It's amazing how much cheese comes up in crime novels, right?
Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many crime novels with cheese puns in the title. There's just a few examples here. Up to no Gouda, to brie or not to brie. Final fondue, that sounds dramatic. Clobbered by Camembert. I told you, there's so many of these. Cheddar off dead.
I feel like you're making these up.
No, these are, I swear I am not making these up. These are all real titles of books that you can probably buy at the airport, I would guess.
Speaking of which, I know you've got a flight to catch, but how about we do a quick fact off before you fly off?
Let's do it. All right, here's a quick one. Did you know cheese can get you high?
I mean, I've definitely shotgunned a pizza or two before, so I think it tracks.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, according to a 2015 study at Mount Sinai, there's a chemical in cheese called casein. And when you digest it, it can trigger your brain's opioid receptors, which may be why we loved going out for late night cheese dip in college so much.
Yeah, we did. Do you know that Edam cheese never goes bad? It just hardens, which is why it was often taken to sea. And I hadn't realized that it actually explains one of my favorite facts, that Edam cheese was used by a Navy ship in Uruguay when it ran out of cannonballs, and it actually won a battle that way, which makes more sense why they had so much old cheese on board now.
Okay. All right. Well, here's a fun one from Kotke. Did you know that in French, pie charts are actually called Le Camembert after the cheese, or sometimes, and I'm going to need Jess, who's helping today, pronounce this one, but is un diagramme en fromage? That is so far away from what I should
laughing.
Be. It works. Okay, we're going to go with it, which is her way of saying it was so off that we're just going to have to ignore it. A cheese diagram. So meanwhile, in Brazil, pie charts are known as pizza charts.
Which makes sense. Brazil is supposedly one of the places that has the best pizza in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of pizza, you remember stuffed crust pizza from Pizza Hut?
Do I? Yeah, I still ask for it sometimes. And these commercials where they encouraged you to eat the pizza the wrong way, crust first.
I know. And weirdly, Donald Trump was the spokesperson for that. But Pizza Hut developed that in 1995, and sales of it were insane. Apparently over $300 million of sales in the first year. And this is from an article in mash.com. But the crazier thing is that foods that are stuffed with cheese, like the stuffed crust pizza or Taco Bell's Quesalupa, are guided by an organization called Dairy Management Inc.
Hmm.
And Bloomberg actually refers to them as the Illuminati of cheese.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is from a Bloomberg article. For the past 8 years, the group has been the hidden hand guiding most of fast food's dairy hits, including and especially the Quesalupa. In 2012, it embedded food scientist Lisa McClintock with the Taco Bell product development team to develop a cheese filling that would stretch like taffy when heated. Then they figured out how to mass produce it and helped invent some proprietary machinery along the way. So apparently the group has a $200 million budget from cheese manufacturers to create cheese-centric products to slip more cheese into our food. Isn't that incredible?
That is wild. You really saved the best for last in this whole thing. I don't think I can top an Illuminati of cheese, especially in a cheese crime episode. So with that, I'm going to give you today's Fact Off trophy.
Fun. And I'm going to dedicate this to my colleague Kate's dog, who I'm certain is listening, always listens to our show. His name is Cheesy, or Cheese for short.
I like that. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. All right. Well, that's it for this week's Part-Time Genius. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Part-Time Genius is a production of Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio. This show is hosted by Will Pearson and me, Mangesh Hatikler, and researched by our good pal, Mary Phillips Sandy. Today's episode was engineered and produced by the wonderful Dylan Fagan with support from Tyler Klang. The show is executive produced for iHeart by Katrina Norvell and Ali Perry, with social media support from Sasha Gay Trusty, Dara Potts, and Vaini Shori. For more podcasts from Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.